So, hey everyone, happy Friday. It is actually Friday this time, unlike the ill-fated Thursday podcast from last week, which ended up not, like, because of technical issues, wasn't even live. I had to record it and then read all that stuff. But let's not live in the past. Happy Friday, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Cash Rundown. I'm joined by the one and only Brian Harrington. How's it going, man?
What is up? What is up? I'm tweeting this out. Great to be here. Happy Friday.
Yeah. Cheers. I mean, let me see how I can cheers you. I'm going to cheers with my two empty little espresso cups. One from like today, there's a left in there. And then this one from the other day, just never got away. Just like the pile of cups at the desk. You know how that works.
Dude, you're just such a hipster. Like just a classic espresso, like classic. Everything on this entire stream is open source. We talked about the difference between the West Coast and the East Coast. Dude, just everything about you just is like all on point.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because depending on how you'd want to classify it, I'm either like an absolute filthy hipster. Like this is how crazy it is. I'm researching getting a copper stamp to stamp ice cubes for my cocktails now. Like my own, getting my own. Like that is ridiculous and no one should do this, but I am. On the other hand, depending on how you want to think of it, I'm kind of a lot like, you know, Joe Rogan-esque in a certain way, in that like I do martial arts, I talk on a podcast, I'm kind of like a pro freedom person who like likes meat and stuff like that. And, you know, I don't have many tattoos. I do have some, but like, you know, that whole thing. So it's like I'm stuck between being like a toxic masculinity person and like a just a weak ass little hipster person. But anyway,
I think the definition of hipster is changing. I've always kind of just used it in a like a very neutral way. Like I don't know. I think it also, there's also a lot of like living with intentionality. Like I think has always been a little bit of a thing, but I just feel like it's becoming more and more of a thing. And like the ice stamp, it's because I think the ice stamp like is Citadel theory. Like rather than spending money on just like kind of vacations and escapism and blah blah blah, etc., it's like, no, like this room, like where I'm sitting right now talking to you, like this is it. So we need our ice stamped.
Yeah, we need all the cool things. So really quick before we start launching into the news, obviously, like, comment, share, subscribe, all the stuff. If you're watching this, please share it if you like it. I mean, if you don't like it, you don't have to do anything. But I would encourage that. As always, you can go to my Discord and jump into the NFT-powered Super Chat. And if you have been on my show, you know, maybe I haven't given it to you yet because you haven't been back on, but you have to come back on after the new era. So I still owe you, Brian, I owe you an NFT. Anyone who's been on the show gets a special NFT. And I'm also selling 100 of like the first 100 subscriber kind of, you know, it's only going to be 100 of them that gets you into the NFT Super Chat and gets you shout outs and all the non-live shows and stuff too. And yeah, basically it, like you literally just buy an NFT, which is a cool, shiny little, you know, token. And then you, when you go into the Discord, there's a bot that checks if you have the NFT. And then if you do, you can go and participate as soon as you sell it or get rid of it, which you can, you know, if you think that this is going to be a huge channel someday. You're like, 100's pretty cheap. I'm going to buy it now. I'm going to resell for 300 later or something. If you do that. But as soon as you do that, then you get kicked out of the Discord. And whoever has it gets in. And I don't even need to know. I'm not like, wait, who has the NFT now? Just people randomly come and go in the Discord. I don't know who has. I mean, I know that they have to have the NFT to be there. So I just thought it was like a way cooler way of doing it than be like, let me get your email and send you an invoice for all this. Nah, you could buy it on the open market. And the cool thing about NFTs that I'm starting to learn is when you list them on like a marketplace, they're kind of like listed, period. So like when I, like if I list something on, let's say, Atomic Cub, you can go to Nifty Blocks and buy it. And you can go to other things. It's just like a, it's like an, in it's almost like a block explorer. That's what these marketplaces are, right? And so you list it for sale, and then anything that can see any NFT marketplace, you can buy it off of there. So it's kind of cool that it's just like out there. So
that is cool. I didn't know that. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. And I am going to, right now, all my NFTs are on Wax, but I am able to put them on, I'm going to start minting them on other networks. I'm probably going to do, Wax and Polygon is like almost everything. But if there's people I like enough who just won't touch either of those, they're like, well, you got to do like a Stacks one or something like that. As long as there's a bot I can put on my Discord to verify if you have a Stacks NFT, I'll find a way to make your NFT Stacks. And if you buy or receive otherwise on something like Wax and then you get tired of it, I'll like burn and remint on a different network if you want it. Just so I'm trying to like, nice. I'm just trying to include everyone in this whole thing.
You're big tent, dude. Your interviewers are big tent. That's what makes us stand up.
Yeah. Well, so enough about, you know, the channel stuff. So basically there's the Digital Cash Rundown channel on my Discord. That's where you go to. And there's a comment there. It's not, that's a little older. It's not relevant to today's thing, but I'll get in there, but it just pops up there. That's where it'll pop up. Anyway, first story. This is a good one. GitHub unbans Tornado Cash repositories following OFAC guidance. Ethereum developer Preston Van Loon encouraged GitHub to fully restore Tornado Cash repositories after partial unbanning. So, basically for a quick recap of the whole situation, I guess a couple months ago or whenever it was, Tornado Cash, which is an Ethereum mixing smart contract to add some privacy to the basically non-existent privacy on Ethereum, the U.S. Treasury Department sanctioned Tornado Cash, meaning a few of the different, like all the addresses associated with it were now considered sanctioned. And the Dutch authorities arrested one of the developers, one of the open source developers, and it's been a huge thing. And GitHub took down the Tornado Cash repository probably out of fear that like, oh no, this is illegal criminal sanctioned stuff and we could get in trouble for this, even though it's just speech, it's just open source code. And now there's been a significant pushback. Like some people, I forget who it was. I mean, I don't know if it's been super publicly identified who it was even, but someone used Tornado Cash to throw dust to every big name celebrity like Ashton Kutcher and like Vitalik Buterin, just anyone who had a .eth address. Jimmy Fallon got dust attacked. Like everyone just got dust attacked. So everyone's a criminal now as kind of a way of like flipping off the system and being like, this is absurd. A lot of people have changed their profile pictures to the Tornado Cash symbol in like solidarity. Mm-hmm. I know that Coinbase, which has nothing to do with Tornado Cash whatsoever, is filing a lawsuit against the Treasury Department on the behalf of, I guess, six individuals who made their case that they were adversely affected by this. But Coinbase is throwing that out there. And as I covered on, I believe it was last week's show, can't remember if it was last week or not. I think it was last week. Coinbase also in their app, they added a policy tracker thing where the Coinbase app tells you who are your legislators or people running for office in your area and how they rank on crypto and then how to register and get votes. So that's 100 million users that could be mobilized. Like stuff is heating up. The pushback against crypto is heating up, but then the pushback in its favor is heating up. And I'm glad that Tornado Cash is now once again open source and available on GitHub, although I'm sure the repositories had already been cloned elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So yeah, isn't that great?
I think it's great news. Yeah. My question on this one that I had written down is just if you're that employee, because GitHub's owned by Microsoft, right?
Now it is, yeah.
Yeah. So if you're that person, at Microsoft with the right access to the thing to take repositories up or down, who are you working for? Like you as that person, that individual, when that email comes into your account saying do this, or if you're the manager that's sending that email saying to, like, who are you working for? Are you working for your users? Are you working for your company? Or are you working for the government? Like, who, like government. Truly, like down to an individual level, what is your reason for waking up and being at your computer that day? Like, and just asking yourself that. And I think that's where I am still very, like, bullish on humans. Like, even taking Bitcoin and crypto and everything out of it, like, I'm bullish on humans asking themselves that question. And I think the last 2 years have forced everyone to ask themselves that question even more. Mm-hmm. And like, we need to get to a point where like we can pay those people, we as in Ben now bringing in crypto industry, yes, can pay those people higher. Like, we have to have higher salaries and better jobs and just better stuff for them to do, rather than sitting at Microsoft and sitting at GitHub being the gatekeeper of that information. So if you're still inside those organizations, you have to push back. Like, you have to type back into your email box, why, or that seems like a bad idea. You need to type that out with your keyboard. And then you also, we need to have good enough options for those people to be able to walk away and brain drain organizations that are choosing to do that.
Yeah, I agree too. I mean, the thing that I'm starting to sort of like realize about this whole thing is the reason most bad behaviors are there because of the bad incentives of the system. And one of the things that like, I mean, let me be honest, and I'm not trying to be political by saying any of this. I'm just being like trying to objectively speak about, you know, the reality that I kind of observe. Government people are bullies because, and I'm not saying that to like as like a political statement or an insult or anything. Government, what they do is they cut they're literally their prerogative. Even if you're 100% on their side, they come in and threaten you with fines, jail time, whatever, if you do something ostensibly bad. And they can either just go and do that, or by the soft pressure, it's like the ahead of time, try to correct, because you can't arrest everyone. But it's just like through certain messaging, through certain whatever, through certain actions, strongly worded letters, investigations, call from the, whatever it is, they get people to, through fear, act. And so it's not like they arrest, let's steel man here for a second. It's like, let's just say the government's only in the robbery prevention business, which is a noble business, right? Let's just assume that for a second, which is very much not true, but whatever. Mm-hmm. They can't go and find and arrest and punish and force restitution from every single burglar in the world. What they can do in some cases, but a lot of what they do is just make people scared. Like, driving around like, oh, there's a like the neighborhood watch signs, we will call the cops. And so if you're going to go burgle, you're like, oh, you're afraid that you aren't. Mm-hmm. So you get, and I don't want to like, I'm using the term bullying positively here, but they literally are in the business of bullying criminals into not committing crimes. But now let's go back to the straw man. Right now we steal that. A lot of what's happening with this, with like GitHub, I don't know for sure, but I'm almost positive that GitHub did not receive any kind of an official court order to remove.
That's what I was going to ask. Did they make the request, or was it preemptive? Oh, doing this.
Yeah, it's preempted. And this was the entire, it was a frustrating moment with the whole ThorChain community. Although, you know, in retrospect, it was much ado about nothing. As soon as the Tornado Cash thing happened, there was a giant amount of noise in the ThorChain community being like, wait, we can't add privacy enhancing assets because we're just not big enough. A lot of us can, we're too big where a lot of us are going to lose a lot of money. We're not big enough to resist a nation state. We can't do this. Let's just put it on pause. And then even the like one of the people running the official ThorChain account kind of tweeted out stuff like that, like, we're not too big to fail. Yeah, we should maybe a fork can do this, or all this nonsense. And it turned out and Chad Barefoot, who's one of the, I guess he's the head figurehead of ThorChain, if that is even a thing. He was very upset by this whole thing, which is why I interviewed him on this channel. Go check out that interview if you haven't. But the nodes is in the money, the users, the capital voted pretty unanimously to add Haven, which is basically a privacy stablecoin project, for lack of a better other description, as a next chain. Basically, the community kind of regrouped and was like, no, we are still committed to, you know, we're not going to let the feds bully us. But the fact that there was that initial chilling wave that hit, I would say if I were to estimate 10 to 20% of the ThorChain mm-hmm. community got all cold feet about it. And even though it mm-hmm. wasn't most, it was enough. There's always a few people that, you know, I hang out in the Dash Discord sometimes. And there was a few people that came in after and were like, oh, you need to, like, you know, we're doing the same kind of sentiment. And it just, the chilling effect makes it so the government just doesn't need to do much of anything. They don't, that's the biggest source of government overreach in my view, right? Mm-hmm. It's not that the government does things it's not legally allowed to do, although it does. It's that they make people scared and make people comply to illegal edicts that haven't even been issued yet. So they don't even have to overstep their authority to overstep their authority. And that's kind of what we saw with this GitHub thing, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. And I think that it's well framed and well articulated, and it's something that then freedom advocates and just freedom advocates and freedom activists need to focus on. How do we help our friends? That I think cold feet is an okay way of saying it. I think the chilling effect is a great way of saying it. It's how do we build tools / build charisma, influence, etc. to help like those individuals, because it's all down to individuals. It's the same thing where I'm like, and the same thing happened inside Microsoft, inside GitHub. Like, so some people got cold feet over this thing, or it's still seen as polite, right? Like I was in student government. Like, I had charisma and I thought that that was the way to help the world be better, right? Was participate in this thing and talk it out and do the whatever. And so, it's a polite thing to do to, like, you see this change, to take initiative, to kind of help the common cause of the whatever. Like, and so how do we help our well-meaning friends? And sometimes when our brain, like, falls back into that also of giving the chilling effect momentum, like, how do we do that? How do we do that? Yeah. And I think,
Unfortunately, each one of these stories is like a 3-hour conversation in and of itself. Like, it never ends. But I will add one little extra layer to that. The reason the chilling effect works is because of centralized structures. And the thing is, somewhere, someone's responsible for everything. And it kind of sort of hit me when I'm thinking about when you get to these too big to fail companies and stuff like that. So just hearing talks from Twitter, you know, Jack Dorsey, I guess, Mark Zuckerberg with Facebook, and Joe Rogan with his podcast. And they all had different takes. However, the overarching message is the same, where, you know, Twitter, like, and Facebook, like, and here's the thing. It might not be popular in freedom circles, but, like, I don't necessarily think that Mark Zuckerberg is a bad guy. I don't think he's a good guy either, let's be honest. But all he wanted to do was make Facebook and connect people. Yep. And then at some point he just wants to build it more. But then at some point it's so big that people are, like, trying to overthrow governments using Facebook. And then, like, well, now we have a responsibility, I guess. And he's just like, I guess we have to hire fact checkers. I guess we have to do this. And it just like, they don't want to be in that business at all. But they're at this point where they're, because of centralization, they're responsible for everything all the way down. And that weight is on it. And so at the top, people want to do that. The thing is, at the bottom, people are responsible to their superior, because Zuckerberg cannot fact check everything himself. Mm-hmm. And he cannot even fact check who he hires to fact check. Other people do it too. Other people do it for him. And it is always like, anyone who's ever gone to had a customer service complaint where you go like, hey, I'm sorry, my like latte wasn't done right. The lower in the rankings you get of people, the more difficult they are to deal with and the less forgiving they are, because they don't have the authority to do more. And then you just go higher, higher, higher. And then, like, that's why the "yet let me speak to your manager" thing is like a meme, like the Karen stuff, is because when you go up the thing, I mean, this happened, you know, the other day, I mean, a couple months ago, there was an error with Bitrefill, and I needed a refund and they didn't want to give it to me. And I asked them a few different ways and they're like, no. And then, so then I wrote a Karen letter, right? I wrote like with strongly word, not strongly, but like, you know, with like fancy words, and I requested to escalate it to this and that, and basically did like a subtle threat of I'd have to like blast them out on Twitter for like scamming me, or but like in a very nice way, just because I knew I needed to get to the next level, and the next level took care of it, and it was fine. And Bitrefill is an awesome service. You should use it for everything. I just use it to buy a computer. So
100%. I used it to pay my gas bill today. No, they crush it. Like, we say that right now. Like, Bitrefill crushes it. And the bill pay is very good. You can search your credit card number now. It's very good.
I am not sponsored by Bitrefill officially. However, I do have a promo code. So if you sign up with a code DCN, I do get a little. Like, I think I get like $10 per person that like spends a certain amount. So I'm not going to get rich off of this stuff. But in case... whatever, but whether or not you want to do that, use Bitrefill. But yeah, that's kind of the thing, is when you have a centralized system, everyone's responsible, and it just ends up being that way. But if you're just like I'm just the trash man here kind of thing, like you can't, like if you just, look, I run GitHub server infrastructure, but I'm not responsible for anything. Like who's going to yell at this low level person saying, you take it down? Sorry, I don't make that decision. And then at the top of GitHub, sorry, I don't make that decision. It's a decentralized architecture. It's like, can you imagine trying to yell at the CEO of Bitcoin about like what some random dude is buying? Like he's buying like drugs and stuff with it somewhere else, or like, sorry, it's out of my hands. We don't do that. Like, can you imagine? Like, I mean, who's the most senior Bitcoin Core dev? I know there's been some turnover, but let's just say one of the senior Bitcoin Core developers. Can you imagine, like, the cops going up to him and just saying, it has come to our attention that this like jackass has been sending like $5 a day worth of Bitcoin to Kim Jong-un. And that is a violation of all. And then you just like, fuck you want me to do about it? I'm like not responsible at all. And I just think that, you know, to wrap up that thought, and I just think that a decentralized system makes it so that people are only responsible for what they do. There might be a broader social responsibility. Like, for example, if I architected Ethereum, if I was Vitalik, for example, and a lot of the world was using it and getting way too comfortable with the absolute horrendous lack of privacy on there, even though I'm not responsible for it directly, I'm indirectly kind of like, I would feel like I need to start figure out not just like a Tornado Cash hack, but like finding a way to add privacy to Ethereum, because I'm getting worried at the greater social impact as an indirect cause of my actions. But the point is, with a decentralized system, you don't have this sort of like scared, easily bullied mentality, because you're not responsible for everything.
Yes.
Yeah. Let me see. Well, just in case people jump in the live super chat, I gotta, before the thing scrolls down, I want to answer this one that was for a while ago. He'll always said, I think we're maybe, and I guess we means like proponents of, you know, other digital cash projects, maybe underestimating eCash's presence in the digital cash space once their new consensus algo takes over with Avalanche. They got optional privacy, instant confirmation with POS and staking. Just don't know if they'll win the network effect battle. We're all in with BCH. Although I would posit that we're not, BCH is not as big of a player as you might think. Oh yeah, they got the redenomination too. Forgot that. Meaning, so you know, eCash is the fork of Bitcoin Cash by the Bitcoin ABC team. And Bitcoin ABC was the team that created Bitcoin Cash that initially forked off, right? And so eCash is like, they got kicked out of their own community for trying to do too many radical things. And so that's kind of it. And the redenomination thing is interesting because one eCash got turned into 1 million eCash. They just I guess you could say that they inflated the supply, but they didn't really, because they didn't create any new tokens. Just all the tokens now were representative of something else to make it easier to spend. But like at these low prices of crypto, like I can pay for a coffee in 0.1 Dash, right? I mean, do you really need to be that crazy right now? But anyway, that's a different thing. So I do think that, here's my thought on the money space. so far, it seems like Bitcoin has done, BTC has maintained network effect a lot better, and its immediate competitors have not gotten that much network effect. Not because they're not competitive technologically, but just because when you have that much of a lead, you need a much stronger differentiating factor. And that's one of the only reasons why Ethereum's done so well, is just because it's, you know, it's completely different. Like all the stuff that you're doing on Ethereum, you're just not doing on Bitcoin. And so that's like the strong differentiating factor. And I think that Monero's been doing probably the best of the digital cash projects in terms of adoption. It's not really that clear. I mean, Litecoin as well, too, based on transaction volumes and stuff. But like, because Monero has a clear differentiating factor of like, always on privacy. It's like, and so people are like, well, you know, Zcash has great privacy, probably better in my opinion, but it's like not by default. And they just recently added it to mobile wallets and like, eh. And that's like, well, you know, Dash has it too, but it's not their number one thing that they're promoting. It's like the market selection stuff seems to be there. So I do think that it's worth taking eCash seriously, but at the same time, they have a giant hill to climb up. And because you can't do basically anything with it today, it's really hard to get going on that. You know, it's almost like 10 years too late if you think about it, because it's just hard to come in unless you're a giant VC funded like Solana type thing that just oozing the EC money and just can come in and just like basically buy a few million users off the bat, and then you get a foothold. That's just my opinion on the whole thing. I don't know if you you probably don't keep up with eCash.
I have a ton of opinions about the money network effects versus gas token network effects that are not exactly relevant to like what the comment was. But yeah, I agree. Like the network effects of Bitcoin are like huge, and I don't foresee. And actually, I can add one more thing to that. I don't want to live in a world where eCash comes from behind to beat Bitcoin. And that's not for any political it's not for any like salt in the wound reason of like, oh, Bitcoin's better. It's for the reason of I'm 30 years old and my son is a year and a half. Mm. I don't have time for that. Like I want freedom to happen in the world yesterday. So yes. I don't have time for the like, oh, XYZ improvement that eCash makes on Bitcoin for this or whatever. Mm-hmm. I just don't buy that Bitcoin doesn't work good enough to live in a world where eCash needs to save the day. Like, I just don't, that paradigm is not in my brain.
Yeah, I mean, that would be sad, I guess. The thing is, I have a feeling that we're going to be living with a few different competing standards in the short term, I guess. And it's we're not going to find this differentiation like where a few start to win out, like until probably 10 years from now, you know? Like I think that maybe in the next 5 years, a lot of people are going to be living on crypto, but it's going to be like 5 to 10 different cryptos. And then that pack is going to start to thin out over time.
Yeah.
So it's like, that might be like the eCash play, specifically eCash, if we're talking about that. That might be the place is just to be one of those competitors. Or it might be just one of those like random things that like you hear, like, oh, everyone jumps on this like YouTube competitor for like a year or two and then it's gone because it just didn't work out. I mean, there's going to be a lot of that too. You know, I just think that eCash is the interesting part about it isn't that it's trying like Avalanche actually, and it's trying, the interesting thing is I think it's the newest digital cash entrant. Like that's kind of very 2014 era thinking, or 2017 with like Bitcoin Cash and all that. Like it's kind of crazy to think that like we need to compete in that space now as opposed to new things. On the other hand, the digital cash use case is one of the more prominent ones for crypto, but it's also way under delivered. Crypto is an investment as a speculative asset, as a financial instrument like with DeFi, and as a data and application thing, in my view, is all more developed as far as like end users than the money aspect, than the payments aspect, which It's so maybe it's the field's still open, but the field is not going to be open for long. I think it's just the next couple of years we're going to have like tons of people using stuff. That's my prediction, at least.
No, I mean, I buy that. I buy that.
All right, so here we go. Let's go with what's the other thing? Speaking of like not things not going well or whatever, IRS to summon users who don't report and pay tax on crypto transactions. Basically, there's a John Doe summons that was basically to investigate unknown taxpayers sent to New York-based MY Safra Bank to submit information about taxpayers that might have failed to report and pay taxes on their crypto transactions. The IRS is specifically looking at users of the crypto exchange SFOX. I don't even know what that is. But the point in this is they're coming for you, right? Is this has given me a little bit of a smile on my face, I guess, how far along crypto got before the government got serious about trying to get their piece of the pie. But they're after it now. The days of just like, oh, this random Bitcoin billionaire you just didn't know about just like shows up, like those are over. Like you know, I mean, I still think there's a possibility that people can generate a lot of and hide a lot of wealth. But like, if you're like, we're talking about like risk, like if you're like a dissident, if you're like a politically, you know, whatever, obviously just do the cypherpunk whatever thing to the max, because you're already in a high risk category. You're not adding too much extra risk. But like, if you're just an average dude with like a family and a job and a business, be really like careful about this stuff. Like don't, my counsel is don't mess around. And it's not moral advice, not legal advice, but just general practical life advice. Just careful, because like now they're going to start figuring out where they haven't, because the US government is basically has been pretty bankrupt for a while, and all the new, it's just full steam ahead on everything. And so they're looking for ways of dealing with their, it's like when you get someone who first develops like a crack habit, right? Their first, the crackhead spends the money in their bank account first, maybe. But then what do they start doing? Then he starts stealing the stereo out of your car. And the crackhead government is coming for your stereo. So that's kind of what that means.
Yeah. No, and the way that I would describe it is, back to the first story, find the line between allowing the chilling effect to have a like a role in your brain and in the way you think about Bitcoin and the revolution with others, but then also have a plan for dealing with bureaucracy. Like I think Balaji had a good tweet like a few weeks ago that just talked about like, even though the empires are declining and like clown world is happening and like the empires are declining, it doesn't mean that it can't, the laws on paper can't lash out and still create havoc in your life, or lash out and like nip at your heels or whatever. So I think having, this is something that is funny. I think like the reason why I'm still bullish is that rich people in America have already lived like this for a long time. Like rich people already have bureaucratic contingency plans. Mm-hmm. And what I hear you saying, and the other way of saying it is, if you are all in on Bitcoin and crypto, you need to think like a rich person. Like you need to have a plan for dealing with bureaucracy. A funny example of this is like, I don't want to go stand in line at the DMV, so I paid another company with no line to go stand in line at the DMV for me and get my new stickers. That's like using the private market to like participate with the like required stickerness of the bureaucracy. And I think that's where just wallets and tools and exchanges, yes, they have KYC, like the automation of, I think, like tax loss harvesting, like combined with Whirlpool, et cetera, all the tools has also grown a lot recently. Mm-hmm. And so I'm bullish on people being able to use the tools available and have plans for dealing with bureaucracy and like limiting the amount that the like government can grow off of this like a lot. And so I think there's just lots of have a way to know what to do if the if you're contacted by the bureaucracy. And don't be afraid of it. Because back to the thing, like tax issues, they're not banging down your door. Like you receive a letter. And I wanted to see that sort of information get out more and more also is like how to deal. Like, and here's how I know this. I don't know this because I'm some sort of hardcore person or whatever. It's because, you know, back in the day when you would commute to work and you would listen to talk radio and talk radio runs the ads that are like, do you owe back taxes? Like call us and we'll help you figure it out. Or like business owners and real estate investors and people in the United States with money have been dealing with this issue for a long time, pre-Bitcoin and pre-crypto and all of that stuff. And so the fact that there's private solutions for dealing with those bureaucratic problems, like combined with the 10x and 100x effectiveness of Bitcoin software, makes me like that's literally where the rubber meets the road on is Bitcoin going to shrink the government. And like I believe yes, because like there's already been private solutions to dealing bureaucracy for a long time. You're combining it with the power of Bitcoin. So yeah, that's how I think about it.
Yeah, and that's another thing is like we're talking about everyone's done like, I mean, the rich have done offshore accounts since the beginning of time. There's always a loophole for them because otherwise they wouldn't let this stuff happen. They always have to be, well, can we get out? Now, it's a lot easier with crypto because I was just thinking a lot of the conversations surrounding all this kind of nonsense, including like, what was it? I saw something that, was it the Treasury or one of those regulatory, I don't keep track of which is which, but one of them was basically making the argument that in a DAO, a decentralized autonomous organization, all voting members are liable for the actions of the DAO. And it's just like pretty crazy. And there's a bunch of other stuff, but the narrative surround that I've seen from all the, so I guess the more in tune crypto people on this has been like, you're making, it's not you're hurting crypto. It's you're hurting crypto in the US, which I think is the correct narrative. Now, so let's just say any of the network, like, I mean, you were using a China-run network for the longest time. And then it just now is kind of mostly not. And like, how do you really care? Do you notice a difference? Mm-hmm. Like, does your Bitcoin feel less Chinese these days?
No. I haven't noticed a difference.
It just doesn't. No. Like, it just, all right, like, if you run a, like a, let's just say a Thor node, like one of these like several million dollar beefy nodes, like one of the few hundred, and then the US starts making, when you need to register things, first off, a lot of people can just like shut it down and rebirth it in a different jurisdiction and that's it. And the same people, or maybe those people are gonna be like, you know what? I'm out of the Thor node business. I'm going to sell it all and do something else. And then someone in another country is like, oh, there's a opportunity to get a new node. And then they go, and then I can still use Thorchain. I don't even know where these node people are. I don't care. Mm-hmm. And so, but at the same time, that a lot of businesses, because businesses are IRL, even DAOs and stuff, like there's some IRL component. They, a lot of that money is not going to be in the US or just be more difficult to deal with US-based persons. There was some developer I saw on Twitter today was talking about how he's going to, he deleted all of his GitHub commits and all that kind of stuff because he's going to just restart it under a pseudonym. And he's just going to be completely like anonymous because the US is too shitty to deal with as far as that stuff. And like, it's a lot of that stuff is going to happen. Like I am not at all worried.
Can I say something about that, guys? Yes. What I liked about his thread, was his comment that he says he's keeping his name account for times when he has to rely on the, I forget what word he used, but like influence of it. And I think that was very, very good because I think that like in, I just think that's great. Like, because we need both. Like we need, with not faces or whatever. I don't buy the like difference between having to like be fully pseudonymous and saying like, oh, building a named reputation on a thing is bad or whatever. Because I just think that's, like his named account still has a great ability to have like a great influence on the world. And so I liked that about his threat.
Yeah. And another person in some private chat thing I'm in was talking about how you need anonymity in crypto. And it's like, yes, the nuance to that is you can be a fully not anonymous person in crypto like I am. And you are, right? Mm-hmm. You can, and you can have your crypto that you use be fully transparent. But it's just when you have both connected to each other is when it starts to become an issue to where everyone knows everything I do kind of thing. And so you can be like, you can be a super public person, a super public pseudonymous person, as long as you maintain your pseudonymity perfectly and everyone sees all your transactions, everything sees, everyone knows you're this one guy who owns a whole bunch of stuff. In fact, there's this fascinating service that tracks the masternode makeups of the Dash ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And it's completely pseudonymous, and like no one really knows who is behind every node, but every node is public, including like their votes and stuff like that. And so there's one, I just think there's one entity that's been, who's like a giant whale, who's known pseudonymously as Wee Johnny. It's not something that he gave, but it's a nickname. It's kind of a joke of how like it's a big fat whale. And like people know who Wee Johnny is. People know how Wee Johnny votes, but no one knows the meat space Wee Johnny. Mm. Like it's just like a crypto thing. And so that's that like that pseudonymity kind of thing you have to have. And I'm sure if Wee Johnny managed to communicate and just say, I think this, there's influence behind that. That not legal personhood, but that entity. Yeah. It's so, it's kind of an interesting thing that I do think that we're going to, like, this whole weird little, like, the crypto space seems, like, very juvenile to some people because, like, everyone's with these stupid monkeys in their profile. Or, like, I'm called, like, the elite disruptor or, like, the Desert Lynx or some dumb shit like that. And it's just like, who the hell you think you are? And it's kind of necessary. It's kind of like a security measure, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just like your pseudonym is just like, this is your, you know, your recognizability. It's kind of like when you have a vanity plate on your car. Like, oh yeah, that's so-and-so. But like, it doesn't say this is my full name. So you can like recognize it. So, let me hit on the stories weren't super good other than the first two. I just hit this one because it is near and dear to my heart a little bit. Blockchain infrastructure firm Chain will sponsor a New England Patriots football team. Chain will work to develop Web3 experiences for visitors to the Gillette Stadium and Patriot Place by merging the physical with the digital. Now, I read through this thing. I couldn't tell what the hell it was actually talking about because it's just so much corporate like hype speak. Like, what the hell is a Web3 experience? What's your blockchain service provide? Does that mean all this is going to be on a particular blockchain, on the Chain Chain? Chain Chain is a really dumb name, though, but whatever. I mean, like, do you, like, what does it mean? I don't care about all that. All it means is, so first off, the New England Patriots are, like, as far as sports things, I mean, I'm not a sports guy, really, but in this realm, like, the New England teams that are all mostly Boston based are huge to the greater New England people. It's just kind of like, it's kind of like hitting the real world. It's not just like, oh, well, some far away, this and that. It's just like, oh no, the Pats, everyone has like a Pats jersey and they're lying for the dunks, you know, getting their regular in the morning or whatever. Like it just, and now the Pats are, you know, shilling all this Web3 nonsense. It's like, it's kind of like the Super Bowl did, you know, issued ticket NFTs, right, for all their tickets last time. And that's huge. But, like, you could say, oh, they did a one-off to, like, get rid to capitalize on the NFT craze. But then this is not stopping. Everyone is getting into this. Starbucks is issuing and it rewards NFTs on Polygon. Like, it's, I'm almost getting scared that I'm going to be left behind. And I've been in crypto for almost 10 years, 9 years now. I think 9 years as of like pretty much like today or tomorrow or something like that. Well, no, more than that maybe. But so it's been like, I'm almost feeling like, cause I have some NFTs. I'm starting to use some Polygon. I have one Polygon NFT, which is my unstoppable domain thing. And like, I'm wondering if like are people going to be using these Starbucks Rewards NFTs before me, like random non-crypto people? It's almost like,
yeah,
I got to get on it because we're getting left behind. It's becoming everything now.
Yeah. No, I love that. What I think is interesting about that is, you know, this giant brand, right? Like the New England Patriots is a giant meat space brand.
Everyone knows Tom Brady.
Yeah, like that's a very big influential thing. And for them to like partnership with this like lesser known like crypto thing is wild. Like that is a weird pairing. That's a weird pairing. And it's and it's like, I think it speaks to there are no crypto native people inside the Patriots organization to kind of comment on, is this a good match for our brand? Like, is this Web3 brand a good match for our meat space brand or whatever? Or you could use different terminology, but there's no one really vetting it at that level that understands it enough. And that then is speaking to, I think what you just said is super interesting. Like, yes, Starbucks picking Polygon. Okay, so maybe that is a little bit more paired. Like that's a more known thing, Polygon, but Starbucks is still a gigantic, gigantic thing. And what I think is interesting is then you saw all the comms from the Polygon side, but I still haven't seen any comms from the Starbucks side. And so it's still this kind of thing where it's like the lesser popular friend is being like, I'm friends with them, I'm friends with them. But the other part, like there's no comms from the established thing. So, and all of that is making me think that, like, that's what then leads into kind of a lot of what I was thinking before about just my new ways of thinking about Web3 and the way that Web3 is going to interact with Bitcoin.
So, real quick, giant rant incoming from Brian and myself. if you want to ask any super chat questions, you can do that right now, or and I'll be monitoring during that kind of stuff. In the Discord there. Also, if you're not cool enough to have an NFT yet, which there's a link in the description on how to buy one and stuff, but do that after the show if you are. You can go to cointr.ee/thedesertlinks and then you can throw a quick little buck in there and then I can pop it out like that. And yeah. So just letting you know in case, you know, before we get into this whole thing, you can do that stuff. Just don't want to have anyone left out. Like we just rant for an hour and then it's just like, all right, time to go by. And everyone's like, wait, I wanted to say something. So anyway, rant about Web3.
Just hit it?
Yeah.
I think the New England story is a perfect way to think about it because, okay, so like I worked on grassroots Bitcoin adoption for a long time. And I worked on like, because Bitcoin versus fiat money, Bitcoin versus USD is important. That's very, very important. And so I was focused on Bitcoin at taco shops, Bitcoin at coffee shops, Bitcoin, you know, replacing savings accounts. Also, like just both of those things, medium exchange savings, like that's all I'm glad that we've gotten to the point where it's like, that's all the same. But what that required was it did require having blinders on to Web3, NFTs, DeFi, buzzwords, insert all the buzzwords, all of the buzzwords.
All okay? the bullshit.
So... And it also required kind of like this whole thing of like, oh, crypto is a testing ground and all the best ideas will come to Bitcoin, or this whole thing of like, oh, the Bitcoin L2s, Lightning, Liquid, RSK, like, et cetera, again, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, oh, those are like gaining adoption or whatever. And just multiple things have happened to me. It's one that like those like feel stagnant to me now, like just the adoption track of kind of like Bitcoin L2s, like the approved Bitcoin L2s is just not like, I don't know. I'm trying to just reevaluate all of that. And then at the same time, the whole like, why does Web3 matter? And like, why does DeFi matter has now hit me a lot more because we have to separate companies and state. And we have to separate individuals from companies. And it bothers me now that here's, you know, in the same way you're like, oh, are all these non-crypto natives going to end up using NFTs at Starbucks and I'm going to be like left behind, even though I've been following the whole thing for the whole thing. My thing that just happened to me on that is I was rewatching Silicon Valley, the TV show. I never watched the full thing. and I stopped out at season two. I rewatched it the other day, put it all the way on, the whole thing, and the scene where they launched their ICO and the VC person got like scared and saw it as like replacing them. I was like, are you serious? Are you serious that pop culture got this to where ICOs are a replacement for gatekeeping VCs? And me, like the grassroots Bitcoin adoption guy, Bitcoin versus USD and all this stuff, have been thinking that ICOs are trying to be money and trying to replicate fiat. Like, that was wild. And that required me to do a lot of introspection that, like, this Hollywood TV show wrote it this way, but I've been walking around thinking about it completely differently. And that just kind of, it was humbling. Like, to be super honest, like, it was humbling. And so I'm now reframing like a lot of things and in process of just reframing a lot of things. And it honestly like feels really good because so Starbucks and the Patriots, would it be positive for humanity for Starbucks to take Bitcoin and for the Patriots to take Bitcoin and for their organizations to start using Bitcoin instead of US dollars? 100%, 100% that would help create more freedom in the world.
Yeah.
Is there upside for those politically connected establishment people at the top of the New England Patriots and at the top of Starbucks to rip out the establishment currency and put in the freedom software? Probably not. Like right now, probably not. Like there's no real incentive for them to shake the boat that hard. And so as a freedom advocate, I can be like, well, that sucks. Like, and I do. I want to live in a world where we can get freedom advocates to the top of both of those organizations.
Yeah.
Like, but like what I can do right now is I can work on Bitcoin adoption as money and see it ripping the USD out of the world and putting Bitcoin in. And I just don't view, I no longer view Web3 and DeFi and NFTs and all that stuff as like competition or taking away from. Yeah, it's not. It's not noise, because the conversation between Bitcoin versus fiat is still very important. And the conversation of like Web3 separating companies and state and like creating more just like decentralization in the world is positive. That is positive. So that's where I'm at on all that. And I just believe then that it's like, okay, how's the tech itself going to work out? Like, I still don't think that gas tokens are money. Like, I think that the gas tokens that are moving NFTs, like, will be purchased with Bitcoin. Like, and I just think the upside of contract platforms, smart contract platforms, cracking read and write access for Bitcoin on-chain UTXOs is higher. That likelihood is higher than approved Bitcoin layers or approved Bitcoin DeFi catching up to where Ethereum and Polygon and et cetera XYZ is and overcoming it. I don't think that's giving the amount of software that exists in the world enough credit to believe that Bitcoin L2s are going to like suddenly win this like adoption race.
Yeah. There's two conversations there, and the one is the importance of Web3, DeFi, a bunch of like all the non like money and cash and payments parts of crypto. And then the other one is like the gas token, as far as like, does it need to be Bitcoin or does it not? So on the first thing, that's absolutely true. The thing is, I'm starting to realize is like everything is technology, everything is evolving. And at some point we went from like paper money. So I mean, at some point we went from like gold coins to paper money as receipts for gold coins. And let's just forget losing out on sound money through fiat. Like that's an ugly part of that whole thing. But then the technology at some point, everything became electronic. So like the card was a way of doing, you know, of paying without just having stacks of cash or a paper check or whatever. Yep. And then at the same time, you didn't have candles. You had like lamps, like either a gas lamp or an electrical lamp or whatever. Stuff started to become electrical over time. And then it went from, you know, and then you had telephones, right? You can go call and all that kind of stuff. So all the stuff we did from like writing letters to telephone, where we go pay with paper or with gold coins or whatever to swipe a card that gets read by an electronic thing, to lighting a candle, to electricity. All this stuff went electric at some point, or electric or gas or whatever. You started putting, you know, fuel in your car instead of, you know, giving some like hay to your horse on your way. It's seriously like all the stuff, all the stuff we need, our the human application suite, right? All the stuff you need to be a human in society upgraded. Right. And then at some point it turned into the internet. Everything went to like web and web two and stuff. Like everything upgraded to the next level. And then I think a lot of us, myself included, until, you know, the last year or so, I've been trying to really expand my horizons as well. We've been so focused on the power of upgrading money, we've kind of not really focused enough on the power of upgrading everything. And so DeFi, I didn't get DeFi because it's such a dumb little overhyped whatever. And you know, a lot of that's true. And ICOs and stuff. But that was not just money, it's upgrading finance. The financial system is much more than just, well, we already got money, why do we need that?
Can I say something though? The people that are DeFi enjoyers and Web3 enjoyers and NFT enjoyers though are at the same time under leveraged and under allocated to the groundbreaking effects of upgrading the money. Like that's true. Like that physically does go both ways. This is not a, oh man, those people were enlightened over there, I'm so dumb. Like it truly is this like wild thing where it's like upgrading apps is important and upgrading the money is important, because like the next logical conclusion to having better money is having better companies. Because if like, and that's where, dude, software, like let's think about this. Okay, if we replace USD with Bitcoin, but if I'm still being paid by ADP and if I'm still signing my employment contract with DocuSign, we didn't do anything. Like we didn't finish the job. We have to finish the job. We have to replace DocuSign and we have to replace ADP. Like, and so we have to eat our own dog food and have soft upgrade the software everywhere. And then, which is why I think the most interesting conversation at the core of both of these then is, are gas tokens money? And what are gas tokens priced in Bitcoin going to do? I think that is a really interesting intersection, and it's one where my brain has been sitting a lot.
Well, that's the exact thing. We're like upgrading everything, and like, you know, NFTs are anything, like documents, basically. And then just like all these things are just the upgraded, less trusted versions of whatever. I wouldn't say trustless yet because, you know,
they're not in trustless security, all these things. These, the apps or the things, the everything security model is not going to feel the same as Bitcoin. It's not like my employment contract with you does not have to be as bulletproof as the ability to move Bitcoin without censorship resistance. Like, dude, me showing up here today was a contract that we wrote with each other over Twitter DMs. Like I said, I will show up at this date and time and click on with the camera button. Like that's me, this thing, this podcast is a DAO. Me and you are both voluntarily interacting with open source software right now. Like kudos to you again on the open source software part of it. Like
streaming exclusively to YouTube, unfortunately right now, but I'm going to get the Odyssey stream fixed. Don't worry.
Agreeing on something and voluntarily participating in it without writing to the legal system. Like now, like that's, and on top of that, this is a commercial organization because you've already laid out the ways that you're monetizing it as well. And so that, that's cool, dude. Like that's not dumb. That's positive.
Yeah. And there's a few different ways of thinking about all this, right? Obviously, you're upgrading systems. I do think that chains, like people used to like, and this is something that like the Bitcoin people aren't as big on, but the SV people are huge on the way they think that, oh, there's only one internet protocol out there, so everything should be on BSV kind of thing. And at the same time, what about if you think about coding languages and stuff? Like, how many is Java? Can you write everything in JavaScript? You know, it's funny because right now the Dash developers, they built a lot of this Dash platform, like the data platform thing, like a separate chain from like the money chain part of it. Mm-hmm. They built it on, I believe it was JavaScript or TypeScript mm-hmm. or something. And they're rewriting it in Rust because Rust is just way more purpose-built for that kind of stuff. And so like a lot of things are like migrated chains to a different chain because they do things differently. And like, so for example, when we talk about stuff like sharding or like sharding and pruning, right? Where, you know, pruning, you delete some of the blockchain after a certain period of time to save space. And then sharding, where each cluster of nodes only processes a certain part of the network or whatever, you know, I'm being super dumb and oversimplifying stuff, but like all those kinds of things that make stuff hyper scalable. Like, I don't know if I need all those things, if I want all those things for my money. I want my money to be written in stone forever, like my chain of property thing. I don't want every tweet of mine to be written in stone. I might want the sum of my tweets to be periodically written in stone. Mm-hmm. But every time I click like on a profile, that data that goes through, I like it to be relatively immutable and decentralized, but I don't need that to be like ironclad. I don't care if it's like a 8 or 9 person multi-sig holding this contract that if like, oh no, my like tweets disrupted for a day because they got hacked. Just like, I don't care that much. It's different. Yep. So that's like the multi-chain kind of future thing. I think that as far as gas tokens specifically, we use the term gas anyway. So if you think about the resources we have in the fiat world, we have dollars, let's say. That's what we pay for. But you do put maybe $50 worth, I mean, it's way more in California, I'm sure, but of gas in your car, but you don't put $50 in your car. You put 12 gallons of gas or whatever. That's the gas. You're not putting cash into your car and like you wouldn't. Your energy expenditure, you have units of energy and you can buy and trade them. Your rewards points at Starbucks are not necessarily in dollars, even though you can trade some for dollars and stuff. Yep. And so there's the reality of money. Money is, I guess, the universal value language. And it's a technology built to let us communicate value more effectively and store things as a way of like making trade efficient. And so money is for trading, really. But as far as communicating value, it's a lot of people like have issues with money. Like, not everything is money. Well, it should be if money is a good communicator and store of value. But the thing is, I think that ultimately you can't have just one money. You can have one financially money, I guess, from our old thing. But as far as value languages, there's so many different value languages out there that should be able to be traded on an open market, by the way. Like you're helping granny cross the road coin. Like you should be able to sell that for real goods and services. There should be exchanges, but sometimes you might want one currency more than the other because people already have social currencies, but they don't have they don't have a money system out of that. But with crypto, every unit of value can have its own gas, its own currency or whatever. And as long as they're interoperable, I think that that's key. And as far as let's just go from like the Bitcoin maxi kind of perspective, is you shouldn't be afraid of any of that as long as you promote the best money in the world, according to whatever you believe, for a just like the payment of debts and basic trade, you know?
100%. So the word I use is like base currency. Like the way that I've been thinking is base currency. And I also think we're moving towards a choose your base world. Like, so not everyone in the world is agreeing that Bitcoin like is the next base currency, right? Mm-hmm. But everyone is agreeing that USD is the base currency of the world right now. And so here's what I think. USD is the base currency of the world.
Yes.
And I would even put it as this, dude. I think USD is also the base currency of Ethereum. I believe ETH is the gas token and USD is the base currency. I believe that's what stable coins are proving. And so here's where we say like, oh, Bitcoin is like inflexible or losing its thing or whatever, or it's just gold or it's just money. It doesn't have programming or whatever. Like the Bitcoin, the amount of humans, the amount of physical humans that have upgraded the software mentally from USD as base currency to Bitcoin as base currency, that adoption is still the biggest in the world. As far as someone, excluding all the fiat currencies arguing with each other, right? Because all the fiat currencies are arguing with each other, but USD is winning that pool. The world will become dollarized before it becomes the next thing. Totally. Mm-hmm. So the amount of individuals, humans, entities, corporations, et cetera, that are in process or have completed moving from USD to Bitcoin is the highest outside of all other alternatives to USD. That's what makes me still think that, like, that's why, but not everyone sees that yet. Some people then believe that the infrastructure of smart contract platforms are going to be so robust and so, like, adopted that the gas token tied to that infrastructure piece will then become the money. And that item is what's going to supersede USD and supersede, like, Bitcoin.
Yeah,
and the fact that I can, like, and I'm just thankful that I can articulate that now, as dumb as that sounds. Like, I'm just thankful that I can, like, string all those words together in a relatively succinct, like, ability, because I want to be someone that helps with the talking past stuff, because it's not going anywhere. Like, the ability to articulate what Bitcoin's doing, what Web3 means, and what a gas token is, that's not going anywhere. Literally millions and millions of people have to understand that, like, in order for any amount of freedom to, like, continue to increase in the world. So that's where I'm at on that. And that's why I believe that then all the gas tokens and the infrastructure pieces are competing with each other. But that the winner takes most of that market priced in Bitcoin will remain, like, flat, like, which is positive.
Yeah. And the thing is, we're in a radical free market environment where we don't know what's going to happen next. And we haven't really been in this environment in a very long time. I guess barter is a very radical free market environment, but it's very inefficient. But then you got currency competition, and then, like, people like to say, and then there was gold coins, and then that was it. Well, no, because half the world is on the silver standard. I mean, even though the gold standard was still the number one standard, there was still a silver standard too. And, like, different economies got affected in different ways. And then, of course, we got a fiat, like, the USD is, like, the predominant money in the world. However, some places you will, like, different country, not every country takes USD, for example. A lot of them are only, like, a lot of them have their own currency that you just need, you kind of need that currency to be able to transact other than, like, border areas. Yep. But also, like, not every, like, the petrodollar isn't 100% supreme. I mean, some countries have started to use other things to price oil in and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I think in the end, we're always going to have a bunch of different, and we're just talking about monies. We're not even talking about gas, but we're going to have a bunch of different monies, and we'll probably at the end, or there's no end, but at the apex, you will probably have one dominant money and maybe even one or two major, but not dominant money. And then just a few that don't matter.
Yep.
And then, and it's not static necessarily. Like, the dominant money could not be the dominant one in, like, 20, 30 years or something. And then the other one becomes. And so it's constantly in flux. But the thing is, like, I have started to realize, and people, you know, what's been funny about, like, this brain block. I don't blame, like, I don't think it's any source of shame that you took this long to kind of figure out that everything, the importance of the other stuff, because right now, like, the only reason I jumped into NFTs, for example, is because I knew I didn't understand them and I didn't value them, but I just knew that they would have value and I didn't know why. And so I didn't even change my mind. I just realized that I was wrong. And now I changed my mind later. But like, it wasn't even like, you know what? I used to think this. Now I think this. It's like, I still kind of think this, but now I realize that that's the wrong thing to think. And so I just decided to start building like a business or stuff like that around NFTs is the only way for me to care enough to get into there.
Dude.
Yeah.
No, dude. So on the not changing your mind thing or what are evolving, I have notes. Like I have physical handwritten notes from like 15, 16, watching YouTube where I had written down like, these are platforms, these are money or whatever. Uh-huh. So yeah, the fact that it's been 7 years of thinking about platforms versus money and all these things, the thing that I didn't give enough attention to was like how those things would be priced in Bitcoin. Like that's what has happened. But through that time, my brain upgraded to Bitcoin as the base currency for all the XYZ like reasons. So in the thing of believing that there will be multiple currencies, I agree. I agree with that. But I also then, I don't fully hate when the kind of like, I don't know, morality or like politics then gets drug into Bitcoin because I'm still attached to a lot of that. Like I believe that staking Bitcoin, AKA saving Bitcoin instead of saving in the S&P 500, that is better for the world. Like that is a moral decision. Like I honestly feel like that's a moral decision. And so if someone is using the S&P 500 as their like savings vehicle when they could be using Bitcoin as their savings vehicle, like they're voting for a certain kind of future that I honestly fundamentally disagree with. And so there is like, that's very real. Like choosing which base currency to use is a political decision. Like, so there's that element of it. And yes, it's like back to, I wish that in 2017, like I don't want to look at the world through the lens of being burned by 2017 altcoins anymore. That was 5 years ago. Like I want to be a more mature person than that. Like, and it's like, yes, because those things went down price in USD and down price in Bitcoin because I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know how to interact with the free market and I hadn't like understood the politics of Bitcoin and understood the world that we're living in. That has nothing to do, that my experience has nothing to do with currently what's happening with Web3 or currently what's happening with altcoins. Like, and so that's why I'm kind of like, for me, it's like, oh, okay, so which gas token does Brian prefer? Like, that's completely open question because I've only been thinking about it for like six months. But it's an upgrade to realizing that like, there is a chance out there, and I believe a pretty solid chance out there, that there is a gas token that will perform well priced in Bitcoin and produce freedom for the world. And that's something that I'm interested in finding.
Yeah, and also like the priced in kind of thing is a little bit like, we might not even need it priced in it. Well, let me put this, like not pegged to the value, right?
No.
But priced in is something that, it's a consequence of things being of trade actually happening and things like that. So for example, on OpenSea, I believe everything is priced in Ethereum.
Yep.
Even if it's like a Polygon NFT, for example. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, that's kind of like what they're using, but it's kind of a separate world from like the Bitcoin world to a certain extent. Yep. And unfortunately, like I wish that they'd be more the same world, you know, they used to be, and then there was a lot more like separation. And I do kind of agree. I'm not trying to take a dump on Stacks or all these other kinds of things that are basically, they're basically replicating previous functionality and stuff through the base assumption that if it's not somehow directly tied to Bitcoin and not just through the free market of trade, then it's just not going to be good. It's not going to be worthwhile. And you know, I mean, what if OpenSea the company, for example, has their reserves in Bitcoin? What if they take Bitcoin, but then all the stuff, like all the NFT stuff, is on different chains, which they have like a support a million different ones. Like there's nothing wrong with that. Just that by creating this artificial layer, it's like, that's the other thing is, the crypto world is still sort of self-selecting for nerdy preferences. it's kind of like being like an Apple user in like the 90s. Like, really? You're going to do that then? Like, and I knew people. I mean, my parents had an Apple II that I played around with. It's like way back in the day. But like, it's one of those things where you, so two things I got into arguments with that kind of show how early we are. Well, the first one is I dove into this whole NFT thing. And then I have like people that were, I mean, some of them might've been looking to me for guidance, but at least peers, right? Who are just like super on board with like the, oh yeah, I can spend crypto here, I can do that here and all the kind of cool stuff. And then I start talking about NFTs and then they start pushing back like, what's this?
Yep.
Isn't this, why do we need it? And like, I was trying to explain to one in particular that it's a good thing to do stuff through NFTs, to put stuff on an, like to sell a subscription to my, pre-subscription to my channel in form of an NFT. It's better than doing it through like Google or YouTube or something. And it's like, well, why do I need it if I can do it here? It was that's from someone who understands fully why you need crypto if you don't want fiat, right?
Right.
And it's funny, like that disconnect of like, I can do it, but like,
because we didn't know we had to upgrade everything. Like, I love how you said that. I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't know that the world was
more
so
importantly,
bad.
You didn't know you could. You didn't know you could.
Yeah. Or I didn't know that it was being tried. And that's where it's like the people that are interested, and it goes both ways. It goes, it was my tunnel vision of like, money is the number one thing I can push on to affect the world, which could be or could not be true. Like, and then it's also the tunnel vision of the people that are building the applications or upgrading the applications. Like, they're not able to articulate to quote unquote normies or Bitcoin maximalists or whatever that why it's important. It's hard to articulate. And you're right, to be so where that happened to me, I was like, dude, wait a minute. Everyone that's telling me to not hold tokens holds safe notes in startups. And then this pop culture show is telling me that ICOs are replacing safe notes and VCs and all this stuff. And I'm like, what? And then I'm like, and when I'm asking out loud, hey,
but Ethereum is centralized, bro.
Yeah, or I'm just asking out loud, like, what is a company? And I'm getting people writing me back, well, a company is XYZ, like, they're giving me legal definitions. And I'm like, wait a minute, why are you giving me legal definitions that are writing to clown world? Like, we already agree that all of that stuff is clown world. But then as soon as I bring up tokens, you're like, well, no, we need the legal system, we need DocuSign, like, you don't have shareholder rights of the blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dude, that's clown world. You can't have it both. Like, you can't have both. You can't be like, oh, the legal rights of the shareholder agreement on the DocuSign, blah, 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 is important, but then all of the politics and clown world is bad. No, that's the same thing. That's the same thing. And that's why tokens matter. Like, that's why separating companies from clown world matters. Like, that's, you're correct. Like, and you can't, there, we can't create the world that we want without, like, without both.
Yeah, and there was a separate discussion also on this stuff, because I was talking about like doing NFTs, right? And I'm like, well, what are my options? And so I look into it, and my buddy Ken Bozak, who I don't know if you know Ken, but he's a great dude. He, the CEO of NFTs, as he calls himself, who's been into NFTs, selling them since 2017, like way back before this was a thing, really. And he was just, he does it all on Wax. And I'm like, I start looking at it, and I'm like, okay, I guess I'm going to start with Wax, because that seems the thing. And I'm looking into other stuff, and I'm like, okay, well, it seems like I'm not going to spend those fees, right? That's just, this is not going to happen. I'm sorry.
Yep.
And so, okay, then it's like Wax and Polygon are like the next ones. And then, you know, they may a little bit of Solana, but I'm not touching Solana unless, you know, ever probably, but who knows?
Yep.
Never say never.
Yep.
So it's basically, okay, I'm going to start Polygon because I can mint NFTs cheap. I can buy NFTs and transfer them cheap. And it's basically inherited 80% of the Ethereum network effect as far as like services that accept it and stuff. It's like on OpenSea, it's in MetaMask, it's all these things. I'm like, all right, I guess I'm going to do that. And I got yelled at for like a day for like, well, but why Polygon's such a piece of crap? It's like, it's just, you know, it's like, it's a stupid L2 that's like, multi-sig. It's like the multi-sig. It's like they only have like 100 validators and like L2 and like it's like 8 or 9 people with the multi-sig. And I'm like, I'm not disagreeing with any of that, but I'm doing rather
trying
than
to do
doing.
A thing for your business, right? And so, dude, L2s and this L2s are going to take the network effects of like tech more, like the MySpace versus Facebook, or what you said, but like using Apple in the 90s or whatever, or like choosing what tool to use, choosing what software platform to use is going to be a lot more like the, like, yeah, even just what you said about Polygon, the way that you just took me through the logic, that makes me understand more why like Starbucks would partner with them. And it makes the chain New England thing look like more of the outlier, because everything you just explained of like inheriting 80% of the
network effect.
Yeah, network effects of Ethereum. And like, so like Stacks. So here I like how Stacks works more than Ethereum. Like if I'm just sitting here objectively, I'm like, I like the way that demand for Stacks block space drives up demand for Bitcoin block space because of the way that the mining works. So like, I believe that's like more functional and more towards like Bitcoin passing fiat, blah, blah, blah. But I have to be like honest that the Ethereum like gap on like network effects ahead of Stacks are obviously gigantic, obviously gigantic. Like, and so that's what's making me think about just like what, like, yeah, just how does that work? Like, does that world, like, how fast are all of these L2 things able to kind of solve themselves out or like arrive on like which one is the best?
Yeah. And that's the thing that, like, obviously usage is better than not usage. And these things are evolutionary. So, like, for example, I know people who are, you know, just being annoying little shits all over Twitter and stuff, being like, well, you say you spend crypto, but you're doing it all through gift cards, man. You're buying gift cards. You're like, you're using a third party that pays your bills for you. And like, they're like, you know what? First off, screw off. But second, I am using, non-fiat. And that I hold non-custodially, that's not associated with my name in any way, and then I'm paying with it, and I'm getting what I want. And I don't care if there's a little hoop on the other end. I don't care if the merchant, I mean, eventually it'd be nice to be purely, but this is like a, this is a step from like not like using crypto at all. Now I'm like, now I have the perfect crypto experience from my end where I can buy whatever I want. Where I send crypto and I on for whatever I want, and I hold it in my own self-custodial wallet, right? Self-custody wallet and stuff. And I'm great. I can just spend it everywhere. It's great. And so it's kind of the same thing with like, oh, I'm minting NFTs on Polygon. I mean, it's better than not minting NFTs at all. And oh, I'm going to use those for a while. And like what happens at some point, I would really like at some point, everyone's going to be able to be more picky with their services. Like right now we're starting out. It's the ghetto phase. It's just like, oh, I got to use this because that's all there is. And like at some point, like, well, I'm just going to wait for NFTs to be on my favorite chain. Well, first off, they might never be there. Okay. Let's be honest. But even if they are, it might be a few years from now. So why not live in the meantime? You know, it's like, oh, I like, it drives me nuts with like people, even the freedom world too, where they're like, I'm going to move to New Hampshire when this law changes. And it's just like, well, then don't be free at all until then. Like, you know, you kind of have your own reward. So that's kind of the thing of like all these crappy L2s. I think the bad ones, even if they're the most popular ones, like you should use them now. And at some point it's just be like, you know what? I'm going to move my NFTs over to a different network because I don't like this one anymore. Great. I'd love to have that choice rather than I don't have any freaking NFTs. And I just got a bunch of like Patreon accounts getting shut down because I'm too spicy with my tweets or whatever. Like, what the hell are you doing? Like, it's insane. So yeah, that's the kind of thing. And like the number of Bitcoiners I have seen bitching on Twitter about my YouTube channel got shut down. This is awful censorship. And I say, are you on Odyssey? Do you use the library blockchain to back up all your stuff? And they're like, no, that's a shit coin. I'm like, well, YouTube maximalist, like you have your reward then.
Yep. No, I mean, super well said.
Yeah. That might be a good place to start wrapping up. Anyone who wants has any other questions, go to the NFT super chat or go to the CoinTree, cointr.eth/desertlinks if you aren't cool enough to own that, and throw in some stuff right before you wrap it up. I do have to say, I have a very sparse background right now because I might keep it this way, but I might also decorate. But your background is quite sparse, except for where it matters, right? I noticed that sign. For the audio listeners in the back, it says The Times, 3rd January 2009, Chancellor on the brink of second bailout for banks, which, is famously encoded in the Genesis block, right? And I think that's a good thing to kind of remember about, like, the shot heard around the world of this is why crypto exists, is they're bailing out the banks again. It's about escaping that world. And also, like, there is fair criticism to the DeFi and NFT world. I'm unfairly being broad in saying that, but, like, all the Web3 junkies who just want their cool NFT profile pictures of their dumb monkeys or whatever they got, and then that they're doing all this admittedly cool stuff, but then they're just like, oh, I don't care if I have to KYC, or it's like, dude, really? Or, like, I don't care if, like, I just want a stable coin, or, like, I want, like, USDC is, like, the best because it's, like, the best stable coin. It's like, don't you think we should get out of all of that? And at some point, like, I think what happened was the money nerds, like you and I, got too hostile or too dismissive of the web nerds. And then they just kind of grew into separate communities and became that everything was in competition with Bitcoin and everyone fought. And then Ethereum was the one that wasn't in competition. And ironically enough, Ethereum is the number one Bitcoin competitor, and there's the number one hate between the communities, despite, you think it's kind of funny how people work out. So, yeah, it all goes back to that exact same thing of the root cause of, like, why you care. And it's like, you go to, that's why I'm, like, political, I guess, about crypto, is because otherwise it just doesn't work out. Like, you don't do the right things, doesn't work out. And, like, you could find a million different, like, root cause of your why. You got to find your why and out. And that's always a big, like, self-help kind of thing. But, like, as an example, like, one of the most famous MMA fighters of all time, Fedor Emelianenko, he's famous for having dead eyes, like, but fighting like a beast. And he just says that, like, he was poor before he started fighting. And then he remembered every time when he looks across at his opponent, he's imagining that person is taking food away from his family, and his family won't make it. He's just like, you got me to cave your skull. It puts that urgency. And so that's why those reminders, like, brink of the second bailout for the banks, it's not just dumb monkeys and stuff and NFTs and vanity things. It's not just number go up either. It's we as a species have been constantly screwed over by the ruling elite, and it's time that that ends. And so, like, as cool as, like, I'm in love with the tech and the awesome things, but at the same time, I'm more in love with the freedom. The tech part makes it fun every day, but the freedom part is why you're in it when it sucks. Because sometimes it does suck. At this stage, it does sometimes suck. Sometimes you're like, I don't know what the taxes are going to look like this year. I'm not, like, I don't know if, like, the thing that I like is going to get regulated away. And, like, there's that, like, why can't I just be an NPC? It's so much easier. But you got to remember why.
No, fully. That's what has like, I say it sometimes, like I don't go to tech meetups. Like, this isn't, I could, like, I love smart home stuff, but I'm not, like, thinking about smart home stuff and, like, talking about smart home adoption and, like, all that stuff at the level that, like, I talk about Bitcoin, because it's not a big enough lever on humanity.
It's funny though, like, when you get to the Web3 type stuff, or Web 4, Web 8, or whatever it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, that is the lever applied to the rest of the tech world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and like, there's a lot of weird stuff like Internet of Things that, like, it's, to my mind, maybe a little too vague or startup speak or VC bait a little bit too much at this point. But ideally, everything that's tied into, so there's two big things. There's the decentralized open source tech world, mm-hmm. and then there is the crypto world. And there is not perfect overlap between the two, but the overlap is coming more and more, because a lot of the reasons why decentralized centralization works, because you have people who are invested and can make money off of it, and they are dedicated to working and making sure it turns out well. Open source, decentralized, is like, it's like a car without the engine almost. Like, it's you can be great, but it's hard to just keep this volunteer work and donations and stuff pushing it forward. Crypto is the one thing that got, because like the self-incentivized Bitcoin system,
yes,
of miners, do you get paid to run the network and the whole thing works. And then everything came after that kind of made it have some permanence, to where you can actually drive like company and profit motive style things forward while keeping it decentralized. And so,
yes,
I think that, like, that's what I call, what I consider to be crypto, is decentralized tech with decentralized money and incentivization built in.
I can give a meat space example of that. Is like, I used to work on political campaigns. I used to work on political campaigns, and there's two things that happen. You're either a volunteer that gets burned out, and that's the open source. You can't continue pushing on the thing because the goal is too hard or whatever, and it gets co-opted. Or you become a mercenary consultant that like just gets paid. And then that's literally what grifting is. And you're just a mercenary that sits in the middle of this thing and collects the fees for being like a influence broker. Mm-hmm. Bitcoin, like, there's no way to make money as an activist in politics. And that's the reason why open source and bit like political movements like don't win. They mm-hmm. don't win to the centralized top down like gatekeeping of, if you don't get the majority leader's like endorsement, your mail pieces won't get funded. And there's nothing that free volunteers can do to change that system. Whereas mm-hmm. Bitcoin and crypto, upgrading everything and upgrading the money, does. Like, that's what's completely wild about it, is that you have the ability to get rich while doing the thing that is most beneficial to you as a person and most beneficial to you as society. Another example, farmers markets. Completely great, right? Like, farmer to person, completely great. However, when you're still passing over the paper money that's getting debased by the establishment, you're not doing anything. You're not doing anything. So you decentralized the application, but you didn't decentralize the money. So you're still being fucked. Like, mm-hmm. that's why it matters. Like, and that's the reason why, like, all these other, like, Bitcoin and crypto can fold into every other like freedom movement and open source movement and anti-establishment movement out there that's happening, and mm-hmm. it can actually bootstrap it now. It's the I said this last time I was here. It's like, it's the number one most well-financed anti-establishment movement in the world, even at the lows of today. There's no other anti-establishment movement in the world where its members are as rich as Bitcoin and crypto.
Yeah, and that's kind of it's kind of funny, because in New Hampshire, there's two political candidates who, you know, I know both of them, Bruce Fenton and Jeremy Kaufman. They're both crypto people. Mm-hmm. As far as I know, they're both largely or entirely, or they were self-financed. Like, Bruce Fenton, I'm pretty sure, like, definitely he's loaded. He's got plenty. But so he got the, I guess, undiluted liberty message out there. Mm-hmm. At like the higher levels, and you know, I mean, I think if you ran a serious campaign, like hired the right people and all this kind of stuff that I'm sure you're familiar with, I think he had a good chance at winning. But you know, he didn't. But that's fine. He got up there. But the point is, he's like a crypto dude who, through being a crypto dude, just could show up and do that. And he got a lot of energy from the crypto world, or the And then Jeremy Kaufman's kind of the same thing. Although, you know, he's running more of a satirical campaign, If you look up his campaign ads, they're amazing. They're hilarious. Yep. But like, it's the same thing of like, that's starting to come back in. And it's like Coinbase is a giant company, company. They're not just a, well, it's the biggest crypto thing. Like, no, by company, global company standards, they're not that small. And now they're hundreds of millions of users, like a third of the US population, basically, or a quarter, whatever it is now able to be mobilized for political reasons.
Yep.
Like, that's me. Of course, they're mostly paying customers. They mostly don't care, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that we're now having that. It's like, it's not just a bunch of like loser libertarians in their basement trying to like figure out how to have an impact on the world. Now it's like money is doing it.
Look, and here's an example of that. Here's an example of that. So XYZ, millions of users per state, like in per state, right?
Yeah.
For you to get a push notification to every Coinbase app inside one congressional district of maybe, what, 250,000 people, 300,000 people? Mm-hmm. Like, and for that to have XYZ click-through rate that causes somewhere in the five figures amount of people to go check the box for somebody, that matters. Like, that matters a lot. And so you know that that meeting between the public affairs people at Coinbase and those congressional consultants, that matters. Like, and that is the kind of thing that it's where then if the majority leader doesn't pick your person, but that other person ran decently enough and has that push notification, that I buy that. Like, I fully buy that that has the ability to move the needle at some level of the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And people getting in these decentralized systems and making the money off of it. That's the thing, is how many people have requested, how many public officials, which are, you know, the devil, not really the devil, but you know what I'm saying? They're not necessarily considered to be like friendly to crypto in general, but how many of them have requested to be paid in Bitcoin? How many jurisdictions, like Colorado just jumped on board, let you pay your taxes in crypto? How many senators and congresspeople, and I mean, obviously in places like El Salvador, like presidents and stuff, have heavy crypto bags? Like it's, and not because they're political, just because, I'll get some of this stuff. Oh, wow. And it's worth more now. And now I don't want to wreck my investment. Like, especially now that I'm voting on bills that are causing the money to hyperinflate, just screwing the whole country. Like, even if I acknowledge that, I understand that I have my own fun, happy money that I don't want to be messed up. And it's, we're in a weird time, but it's a cool weird time, because I think I'm very optimistic for the future, despite seeing all the nonsense going around. So, you know, crypto, all the things is kind of the takeaway to this. Crypto, all the things. And once you're entirely on crypto, and I'm not saying you're spending crypto as your money, which is, you know, was my first step in the journey. Once everything in your life is crypto, then you can start being more picky about which cryptos you use.
Yeah, super fair.
Yeah. All right. Tell people where they can follow you and do all the cool stuff.
Yeah, Twitter, brain, like in your head, Brian Harrington. And if you search Brian Harrington on YouTube, I've got a channel where I talk about homesteading also. So trying to make my house just more resilient, different systems too. So that's kind of my relaxation from thinking about Bitcoin all the time. But Twitter, Brian Harrington.
All right, fantastic. Well, before I sign off, this is only if you're watching the actual feed or whatever, but I'm going to present you with the cool guest-only NFT officially. Yay. I'm going to send it to you. We'll arrange offline for like the actual stuff, but like all that super chat in the Discord and all that kind of stuff, you get in. That's another thing about like value creation. Like, rather than just sending you, like, I sell these, the main subscriber NFTs for like $100, right? But rather than just like paying all these guests, which, you know, I could go broke pretty quickly, instead I create my own value tokens, which are these, you know, limited subscriber thingies. And I create the version that's only for people who are on the show, which confer all the same rights, but an additional channel as well, just for, just for the people who've been on. So I get to send you a token of value that you might want to try to sell it or something, but you might also not want to try to sell it. And it's just like, it doesn't have to be, I send you a little bit of Bitcoin, right? I can send you something else. So well, thanks for very much for being on. I'll have you on at some point in the future, obviously, because you're always a good time. By you know, the evidence to that, which it's like almost 2 hours in. So yeah, thanks very much, everyone. Happy Friday. Enjoy yourselves. And I'll see you next week. There's going to be another fun guy, which you'll just have to see on next week. So bye-bye, everybody.